budgeting, practical budgeting process. I want to emphasize, if you haven't got the message yet, all other forms of debt beyond house payment and car payment is of the devil. Okay? I mean, in terms of study debt, that's also legal. I mean, Steve touched on those things. But the other forms of debt are unbelievably expensive. I mean, I saw these little cards being distributed here in East London that you can get like short-term loan, say R1,000 just for the month. So you get it from the beginning of the month, and by the end of the month you get R1,000, say, and the end of the month you pay that back. Okay, so there's the short-term debts, and so they're promoting it. I took the numbers, I went into the website, I worked out what are you actually paying. You're paying 200% interest on it. If you work it out on a year, because they're doing it in a month, so it's around 20% for the month. But if it was a year thing, it would be over 200% interest that you're paying on that money. They're making a killing. So don't do any other forms of debt. I mean, the lady that works at our house, I mean, she doesn't have a lot of money, but she was so bound by debt, buying a fridge, I think, at something also 20%, 30%. It was unbelievable. The yoke around her neck, you know, in terms of debt. So are we all in agreement? Run away. No accounts, no Edgar's accounts, no other accounts, no Woolies on debt, all those things. Stay away from it. Okay. Amen. Thank you. That was my little bit that I want to put in there. Now over to my wife.
Okay, first of all, how many of you do have a budget? It's fine if you don't have one, so don't. Just give me an indication. Okay. A few, but not everybody. I know some people feel that a budget is very restricting and it's, you know, boring and it's for those people who don't have anything better to do with their time. But let me ask you another question. How many of you are tired that by the end of the month you do not know what happened to your money? Is there anybody like that? You're just tired of, goodness, it's gone, but you don't really know what happened to it. That if you are in that position, a budget will really benefit you. It's really going to add to your life. You see, and it's like Steve also said, many people live from the one salary check to the other. Unfortunately, because nobody's ever taught them to do it differently. And to change your situation, you need to think differently. You don't need to have a lot of knowledge. You don't need to have a financial degree or a BCom or anything like that. You just need to change your thinking and get a few practical things in place. So I want to show you. I got this for my son. He can buy it at Crown Financial Ministries. Go onto the internet. There's awesome resources as well for kids. We use that at the moment at our kids' church. On Sundays, so during our generosity month, we also teach the children on finances, great resources. The one says spending, the one says giving, and the one says saving. This is Vian's stints. And it's amazing at the age of 7 that I can teach him in a very simple way how to manage his finances. He knows some must go to Jesus, he knows some he can spend and some he must save. You know, and it's, even though my dad was always very responsible with money, you know, I have 3 brothers and a sister. My dad is a teacher and my mom only started working again when my youngest brother went to school. Then my sister was 16 years old. So for a very long time, my mom stayed at home and my dad provided for a big family. And my dad always says, you know, if people ask him, how did you do that? Then he says, there's 3 reasons. I did not go on expensive holidays. I did not drive an expensive car. And I did not marry a wife who is very expensive. That's his 3 reasons, you know, for being able to provide for a big family on a teacher's salary. But we have to teach our children. So how can we teach our children if we don't know how to do it? And it's not difficult, but it starts with a few practical things in place. So I want to share with you, that's also in your notes, the 70% principle of lasting wealth. It's not exactly the same as these tenths, but if you are not in debt, if you don't have any debt, the first 10% goes to your tithe. I'm not going to speak about tithing now. It's a topic for a different day. But if you are serving God and if you want God's blessing on your finances, the first 10% goes to your tithe. The second 10% goes into savings. Okay? First 10 into your tithe. Second one into savings. I'm going to explain to you now how we save. Savings is something you're not going to use this month, but you might use it next month. Or you might use it 6 months from now. That's savings. But you start saving this month. And then the 13% goes toward investments. I'll also speak a bit about retirement annuities. I know all of you have lots of questions on that. And I know Steve's session maybe did not include all of you, because some of you, some might not even have a retirement annuity. You might not even know what an RA. Oh, goodness. They talk about an RA. What is an RA? So I'm gonna touch on that as well. But 10%, that's the 70% principle of lasting wealth as a minimum. You could try and live even off less of that, but that means you live on 70% of your income. That makes sense? Because 10% goes to your tithe, 10 goes to savings, and 10 goes to investments. It's just you can structure it in any kind of way, but the bottom line is we need to learn how to live on less than 100% of our salary per month. That's your secret. You see, that's the key to financial peace, because if you live on 100% of your income, you will feel pressure. If you live on 70% of your income, you will feel rich. And that is what I experienced. That is truly how it works. If you are in debt, that 10% changed a little bit, or that's 70% principle of lasting wealth, the first 10% goes to your tithe, even though you are in debt. The second 10% goes into paying off debt, which should then be actually additional to your monthly debt commitment, if possible. So it goes into paying off more than possible, if you could. The third 10% then goes into savings. It doesn't really make sense to make big investments if you have a lot of debts. Okay, depending on the kind of investment, if you're going to buy a house, we have very limited time now. So maybe if we speak about things and it creates more questions than answers, then we need to either have a session or you must email us or something. We have people in church who can also assist if you want to sit with somebody to draw up a budget. So let me know if you are desperate for a session. Okay. But it doesn't really mean to invest and you earn 7% on your investment, but you pay more interest on your debt. Then you should rather put that money into your debt. That makes sense to you? So this is why, if you have debt, it looks a bit differently. Okay, so I just want to share with you my story. When I started working, I earned 3,600 rand per month, of which 700 I had to pay for a laptop. So effectively, I earned 2,900, because the 700 I never saw, because it was deducted to pay my work laptop. 2,900. I lived in a bachelor flat with a friend. And after 2 months, she went to America to do a pair work. She left me with a whole rent to pay. It was 550. It jumped to 1,100 after she left. I couldn't find a roommate immediately. So I had 2,900 and my rent was 1,100. Okay? I gave 360 to the church because that was my conviction to tithe on my gross income. Remember, that was 3,600. So if it left me with 1,440 rand per month to do everything. Okay, I had no car. I had no cell phone. And I had to live simply. This is why I used cash. It's the only way I could have survived. And it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. It taught me a lot of things. It taught me that it's possible to survive with a very limited income. I didn't have a car. I've shared the story, so some of you might know it, but for 9 months, I didn't have a car. It was quite a crazy time in my life. But did I die? No. Was it a pain? Yes, it was. It was a massive frustration for me. But I didn't die. And I did not want to get myself into a position where I cannot breathe because of debt. So I waited. I waited for the right opportunity. So we have to ask the Holy Spirit for lifestyle guidance before we start earning a lot of money. Otherwise, we can literally just up our standard of living every time we get a salary increase. If you do not close that circle, you know, of forever upgrading and forever spending more and forever, you know, just wanting more and having more and doing more expensive holidays, you forever going to stress over finances. You're never going to build up wealth. And I don't think we're going to ever learn to become generous, because I think the reason why God often gives us more is so that we can be more generous, not necessarily for us to drive a fancier car. So that's something you can chew on and think about. But let me get to the very practical side. You will find a budget in your... Okay, now first before you turn to your budget, I'll get to the details now. For 3 months, and for those of you who are maybe not administratively so focused, this might be a challenge for you, but if you married, the one who is the most focused on detail could maybe do it. If you're not, if you're single, get a friend to help you, or, you know, just put your accountant hat on for 3 months. You have to keep track of everything you spend for 3 months. If you have no budget, if you have no idea where your money is going, you have to keep track. So you literally need to write down every time you swipe your card, every time you pay for something, you need to write it down. It's going to take a bit of discipline. You can do it in whichever way you want. If most things go off electronically and you just swipe your card for groceries and things like that, you can literally just go to your bank statement and add up all of those things. Every time you go to spa or Pick and Pay and put that in a certain pot, okay? Instead of writing down every detail of every slip. But if you're really battling and you want to change this, you have to keep track of what you spent and you have to write it down. It's the only way. You have to do it for 3 months because there will be different expenses during different months. And then you have to take an average for the 3 months. Okay, are you all still with me? To write it down, you need to add it up, divide it by three, and then you say, okay, I've spent so much on groceries. I've spent so much on petrol. I've spent so much on, because I think we often think this is how much we spent, but that actually is very different to your budgeted thing in your head. I mean, even us, we have a budget. The actuals are mostly not in line with the budget, unless it's like something like rent, which is fixed every month. But something like groceries or petrol, it varies every month. So you have to have an idea of your actual, otherwise you can't budget. So you need to start with your actual and write it down. Then Excel could be very useful for those of you who know how to use Excel. It's very simple. If you don't know how to use it, go to a friend and ask them just to show you how to use Excel. Okay, for those of you not familiar with that program. If you are married, once again, you have to do this together with your spouse. If you are the husband, you are in charge of the finances, you have to include your wife. You have to include your wife. If the wife is maybe the one who enjoys it more, or she has the financial background and she does it, you have to at some point then include your husband. You know, you have to have a meeting. You have to talk about it. In our situation, I enjoy it, so Andre leaves it to me to do the budget and to do all the admin behind the scenes. But every now and again, I just, if there's a change, if there's either a salary increase or either a drop or a increase in our income, I would redo it, and then we would sit together and I ask him, can I have 5 minutes of your time? And then we sit together. I say to him, this is my suggestion, because I also have a good feel of, say, Vian's needs and our son, 7-year-old son, school fees. I'm just more focused on the detail at this stage in terms of our personal budget. Then we talk through it, we decide on what we're going to do, and then I continue for another year. We never fight over finances. In the first year of marriage, it was more complicated. When I was the only one working, it was very stressful for me. We had quite a few arguments over, can we, should we, you shouldn't have, and you know, all of these things. We are in a position now where there's so much peace. So much peace and freedom, and it's enjoyable. It's enjoyable purely because there's not stress and there's no pressure. But you have to do it together as a couple. So finances in marriage is a bit of a different ball game than when you are single. But it could be and should be peaceful and enjoyable, and it should not be a burden. All right, this is what you should work towards. Complete peace, freedom, and no arguments in your marriage when it comes to finances. It is possible. It's really possible. I just want to read you three quotes, and then we're going to go into a practical budget. A quote by John Piper. The issue is not, that's in your notes, I think. The issue is not how much a person makes. Big industry and big salaries are a fact of our times, and they are not necessarily evil. The evil is in being deceived into thinking that a $100,000 salary per month must be accompanied by a $100,000 lifestyle. God has made us to be conduits of his grace, and the danger is in thinking that the conduit should be lined with gold. It shouldn't. Copper will do. That's just something for you to think about, because when we do our budget, it's very important to honor God, because we need him. Okay, let's be honest. When we try to do it in our own strength and in our own capability, we battle. We need the provider of heaven and earth, the creator of heaven and earth, whose name is God our provider, to come and step in. C.S. Lewis said the following, there ought to be things, which means there should be, there must be things, that we should like to do and cannot do, because our charitable expenditure excludes them. Not because we don't have the money. It's not, there ought to be things that we should do and cannot do because we don't have the money. This is not what he's saying. Because our charitable expenditure excludes them. So think about that one. Then there's another one by Susanna Monica Kruger. That's me, for those of you who didn't know. Just because you can afford it does not mean that you should buy it. This is my own quote. Just because you can afford it does not mean that you should buy it. And I don't say it lightly. I really don't say it lightly. I've been in a position in my life where I was there. I could afford many things. You know, I shared the story before, but you know, there was a stage in my life where I earned so much, I would literally walk through Game, for example, through that aisle where they have all these kitchen gadgets and implements, a liquidizer and slow cooker and all those things. And I don't spend much time in the kitchen. I don't spend much time in the kitchen. I just do what is necessary. But now I walk through the aisle where all of these kitchen things are, and I had no desire to have them. I did not know even how to use most of them. But all of a sudden, I think, I can buy this because I could. And all of a sudden, I wanted to buy them. And my heart, all of a sudden, was drawn to all of these things in the shop just because I could. So I want to challenge you. I want to challenge you today. Just because you could afford it does not mean that you should have it or that you should buy it. And it goes together with what John Piper and C.S. Lewis said. There must be certain things we can do, but we are not going to do it because we make a decision, and we do that by budgeting, to live in such a way that will be honorable to God and that will be flexible so that we can give and can help and be generous, but also enjoy life. Remember, in all of this, you have to realize that the idea is not to sell everything and give it to the poor. God wants to empower us to be a blessing. And he's a good father. He wants to bless us. But we need to make a decision before we start, before the millions and the billions come in. And the thousands, if you maybe not even with the thousands or the hundred thousands yet, before that comes in, you need to make a decision how you're going to live. Because I tell you, when the millions come and you haven't made that decision, it's going to be very difficult to make the decision. And we do that by doing a budget. So, before we go into the detail, when you do a budget, you can have monthly expenses. Okay, so it happens every month. Typically like your rent or food or petrol, things like that. You're also going to have medium to long-term expenses. This is where we're going to save towards. This medium to long-term expenses, like saving for a car, saving for a fridge. Then you're going to have once-in-a-lifetime expenses, like studying, saving for a wedding ring. Once-in-a-lifetime expense, eh? Once-in-a-lifetime expense. Saving towards something that should theoretically happen once in your life. And we have to kind of include all of those in our budgets, if possible. If not, you know, when I earned my $2,900, there was no way in which I'm going to start saving for a wedding. Okay? It's just not possible. So depending on your situation, depending on your season, depending on where you are at, this is how you're going to plan your budget. And also, if your income is limited and you must go without certain items, you leave it in God's hands because God knows how much you earn and He knows how much you need. This is the beauty of serving God. This is the beauty of honoring God when it comes to our finances because we can draw from our heavenly accounts. Amen? We can draw money from our heavenly account by praying and standing in faith when we need something that we can't afford ourselves. Good. So now you can go to your budget in your notes. I did a budget on a 15,000 rand income, just for illustration purposes. Some of you might earn less, some of you might earn more. If you are a family, you would have two incomes. So I'm primarily going to focus on this is a single person. If you are married, I would recommend that it is our money and not your money and my money. Because you are one. You are now one. Which means the moment there's like, oh, I pay for this and you pay for this and, you know, switch off the lights because I'm paying for the electricity, you know, it can cause, you'll be surprised how many fights there can be over you pay this and I pay this and you better work together because it's my bill, you know. Or I pay for the groceries, so no Pringles, you know, it's too expensive. You know, it should be our money. It should be our debt. It should be our expense and our income. This is the way we do it. So if you have more questions on a marriage relationship and finances, we can talk afterwards. But it is a bit of a different ballgame. But you have to communicate. Okay, so this budget is for a single person. And I work on 15,000. You can go onto the internet. There's many websites that can show you exactly how you can work out after tax. This 15,000, the after tax is 13,546. There's many programs on the internet that can work it out for you. This is the assumption that your employer does not pay your medical and your employer does not pay your retirement annuity. Okay, so all that came off here is your tax and your UIF. If you don't know what UIF is, don't worry too much. Okay, but there's taxes that comes off. Now, to do your budget, you must open your payslip first. Yeah, you can laugh, but there's so many people that tell me they never open their payslip because they don't know what they earn. And then I think, but how do you honor God? You have to know what you earn so that you can honor God. You can't guess your tithe. Okay? And then it's people that I think they are solid, you know, they're solid Christians, and then they don't know what they earn because they never open their payslip. Please open your payslip. Please open your payslip. Make sure what you earn, because if you don't know what you earn, you can never start your budget. You can't just make up a number. So you need to, this is why I said you must bring your payslip just for yourself. This also, that total net income also includes the tax benefit on your retirement annuity. Okay, so for those of you who don't know, let me just go into a bit more detail than what Steve did. If you have a retirement annuity, which means you pay money for Alexander Forbes or for Liberty or some of these companies, they manage your finances on your behalf. They buy shares. In South Africa and overseas, they buy shares for you at companies, and they manage that on behalf of you, and you pay a certain amount to them. It does cost quite a bit. It's quite scary to see how much they take. However, if your investment grows, if it still grows by quite a percentage per year, more than what you would earn in the bank, it's still worth it. Okay, I know Steve focused a lot on property and that the retirement annuity is not necessarily such a good investment. I completely agree with him, but you need money to buy a house, to start renting it out. You need a couple of hundred thousand, actually. But you can start with a retirement annuity for a couple of hundred rand per month. So if you don't even have that, I would suggest that you start there. Okay, you get a quote, you go to Alexander Forbes, you email somebody, you get a quote, and you get an idea of what it's going to cost you per month. It's a forced way of saving. Even though you pay for it, it's a forced way of saving, and it's better than nothing. Okay. Just if you're wondering about that. Also, there's a tax benefit on a retirement annuity. And as Steve also said, in the long term, it's better to have your own assets and managing your own assets. But it's just some of us are not there yet. Not at all. And you have to start somewhere. So I would suggest that putting a little bit away into something like a retirement annuity where you at least get a tax benefit is better than nothing. Okay, any questions around that? Okay, otherwise I'm going to just continue. Okay, your tithe should be your first item on your line item on your budget, not your last one. Because you always take it from the top, which means there is always 10% to give. This is how we do it. We tithe on gross. I'm not going to go into a debate now. Should it be gross or net? We tithe on gross. So I put there 1,500. Gross means before tax. Then I put a retirement annuity. You could do any kind of long-term investment. Remember I said 10% goes into your tithe, 10% goes to investment, 10% goes into savings as a minimum. It's the principle, 70% principle of lasting wealth if you want to grow your wealth. Retirement annuity, we've spoken about that. Rent will definitely be something. It's either going to be your bond payment or rent. You trust God for a place that you can afford. As I say, I shared a bachelor flat with a friend. Do you know what a bachelor flat looks like? It's just one big room and a kitchen. It's all open plan. I mean, it's not many people would do that, but I didn't have any other option financially. And it was good. It was good. It taught me a lot of things. You don't have to live in your own flat. If you can't afford it, you can't afford it. So trust God for something that you can afford. I mean, I hear so many stories of people testifying that God provided something beautiful that they can afford. So that is rent. A car. Okay, this budget is also assuming you don't have any debt, except I put down a 1,000 rand payment for a car, which is not a lot. But that is all I could fit into my budget so at this stage. So I need to look for a car that's going to be 1,000 rand a month. Otherwise, I must walk, or I must ride my bicycle, or I must buy a scooter. Okay, there's families in the church who have one car, and the husband literally walks to his doctor, one of our doctor couples. He walks to Freer Hospital in the mornings. I have so much respect for that. There's another couple, the husband's driving his bicycle. Riding his bicycle to work. They have one car. They live simply. Okay? If you can, in any way, if you are in a position where you cannot afford something and it's going to strangle you because of debt, trust God for another option. Trust God for a lift club. Trust Him for something. Okay? But do not go and overextend yourself and buy a car that's going to strangle you. Okay, insurance. Okay, there was questions about insurance. Let me just give you my opinion as well. Some of these things are my convictions, mine Andre's convictions. You need to sort out with God and with your spouse if you're married, what do you believe? Okay, in terms of insurance, we have insurance on our house. we're renting, but we have insurance on the content of our house and our cars. One of my cars were written off previously by a friend, and if we did not have insurance, it would have been a very bad situation. Praise God, we did. So I really believe it's wise. You know, we live in a fallen world, unfortunately. We live in a fallen world. If you can't afford it, you trust the Lord to keep you safe and your car safe. But don't say, I can't afford it, I stand in faith, and then you go to movies 3 times a week. Okay? So you need to be honest with yourself, whether you could actually afford it or not, and whether this is faith or this is just you're just irresponsible with your money. So we have insurance on that. We have often spoken about life insurance. Many people pay a lot of money on life insurance. And I agree with Steve, it depends on your situation, especially if you are the provider and maybe your wife does not have a proper qualification. So if something happens to the husband, the wife is going to be in a very difficult situation. We've just always spoken about it that even if I get left behind, which I'm not, I'm living with my husband at the same time, I would be able to support myself because I have a qualification. I would be able to go to work and to do something. So it's not as if I'm going to sit on the street and not be able to do it. When you are a parent and you have children, however, it's something you need to look at maybe just for your children's sake if something happens to both of you. I've just seen people, they do it because of fear and not of, they're not necessarily doing it because they're responsible. They're doing it because they are freaked out by the idea of something is going to happen. Okay, so please check your motivation when it comes to life insurance. We can't live in fear. We're all going to die, but God is not dying. Okay, we must remember, even if we leave somebody behind on earth, God is still there. It is just that we should be responsible enough that whoever are being left behind does not become somebody else's responsibility. Okay, please. So we need to be responsible for our families, but we can't so over-insure ourselves because we are fearful. Okay, because unfortunately, when it comes to financial planning, the people play on your fears. Okay, and I've been in the financial world for a long time. If you add up all the insurance that they suggest or they recommend, it's thousands. You know, what is ongeskiktheid? What? Disability. Your disability. You must have disability and you must have life insurance. You must have this and this and this and this. And then by the end, it's like half your salary, depending on what you earn. So just, whenever you consider these things, discuss it with your spouse and think about it and pray about it. And don't do it because of fear. Do it because you feel at peace that this is going to be a responsible decision. Does that make sense to you? Okay. I would suggest, as a minimum, you have insurance on your car, your house content, and then also medical insurance. This is what we have. Medical insurance means you have a hospital plan, like many of us would know it. We don't have a medical savings plan, which means we don't just go to the chemist and we tell them, send the invoice to the medical aid. I don't just go to the doctor and say, send my invoice to the medical aid, because there's actually an admin fee connected to that. Once again, somebody else manages your money on behalf of you, so you pay extra. Okay, so I tested it, so you can test it as well, but I mean, I've been to the chemist. In the past, when we did have a medical plan, I would buy something, cash. I'd just say, cash, thank you, buy. I would pay 30 rand, and then when I say, you can just, you know, use my medical aid, medical savings, then I pay more. It's great if you are not a consistent saver. If you're battling to save for your medical expenses, it's good. If you are not battling to save, I would suggest you save separately. Like I have, okay, this medical aid, 1,100. I checked a few medical aids now last week just to get an updated number. You need to, it's not cheap. Medical insurance is crazy. Hey, but that does not even include a medical savings plan. This is just the hospital plan. Then I suggest you save separately for your medical expenses on a monthly basis. Do you all understand now what I'm talking about? Okay, you can either just have medical insurance, which I would recommend, especially if you're a married couple, if your wife falls pregnant, all of those things are extremely expensive. So just at least for that. But it's, I think it's wise to have medical insurance. Okay, if you cannot afford it, once again, God is really faithful, and we have public hospitals. It's not the end of the world, but again, you do it because you honestly can't pay for it, and then you trust in the Lord. Okay, but those are the two insurances that I would personally recommend for everybody. Electricity and water, that's something that you could kind of manage a little bit by switching off the geyser, you know, and all of those things. I would just recommend that you don't get too tense about electricity and water, that it's going to affect your marriage relationship, especially if you're married. You know, now your husband can only shower for 2 minutes. You can't use all the whole geyser's water. 2 minutes only, and now you scream, switch off the, close the tap. You've had your 2 minutes. Or you don't even want to bake a lasagna in the oven because it's going to be so expensive to switch on the oven. You can get very worked up, you know. However, you could save on electricity if you are wise, and if you're really tight, it is an area where you can save. Okay, so please see what you can do to save on this. We work from home and we are at home all the time. So our electricity is quite high, but it's also our work environment. So see what you can do.